I'm going to pass my little sheet around because now y'all have had time to think about it. You weren't here. In the fall, when we start up again, we talked about extending our class to an hour, so 45 minutes. In the first few minutes, 5, 10, minute and a half, whatever people feel like doing, we're going to sign up and they're going to do either a Psalms or a Proverb, although Carol wanted to do Isaiah, and that's perfectly fine. Just a small presentation to the class. And then I have every third Wednesday room for a guest teacher, because y'all don't need me to be the teacher for eternity. I used to have, when I started that child development class program at Weatherford College, I started out with just a few students, and they were in a lot of my classes because few students, few teachers, new program. But as we expanded and got other teachers, I had two or three of them that would come to me and say, I don't want to take your class. I want to stay with you. I said, you know, you don't need child development according to Gene. You need child development, the big picture. So y'all don't need just the Bible according to me. We need to have lots of different viewpoints so we can bring up lots of different things, because we all do get a tunnel vision of ways we've always thought about something or ways we've always approached it. And when someone else comes in with a different approach, then we can say, oh, I never thought about that. That goes with this scripture. So for my sake and for your sake, I don't need to teach the class every single time. So I'm going to pass this around. You notice we now have three spots filled, Carol, Yvonne, and me. So, and last time I didn't have a pen, but this time I do. Pass it around. Feel free to fill out anything you want. But I will just keep passing it around. I really will. And it's a long year, so everybody will need to do more than one of these. Can we start here or move it where you go?
I just thought
that's 50 weeks. How many weeks do we meet? 9 months times 4, 36 weeks? Do you see 36 people?
We take time off in December.
Can we take a little time off in December? And I don't think I took... Let me see if I took all those off. And if you don't want to do it this time, I'll pass it around next time. I did take off the 2 weeks. You know, Christmas and New Year's week. I took them off. Yeah, I only went through the end of May. You want me to start somewhere else?
You can, just so that I can look my scripture up.
Yeah, well, get your... Yvonne asked if you could sit at your seat while you did yours. Absolutely. I don't care who stands or sits where. At one time, Clay didn't sleep well when he was little bitty. And I remember saying to him one time, he came in the middle of the night, Mama, can I sleep in your bed? I said, Clay, you can sleep on the floor beside me. You can sleep in the bed. You can sleep under the kitchen table. I don't care where you sleep, if you just sleep. And so I feel the same way about this. I don't care where you speak from. If you want to stand in there and shout, I guess we can figure that out too. Hide behind the curtain, you know, so nobody can see you like the Wizard of Oz. Could do that. Carol, Kaylee said to be sure and tell you thank you for her card. If I don't tell you now, I will forget to do it. All right, we're still talking about what we say to strangers. But I have lost track of exactly where I was. Aren't we on the strangers, right? Is it on page 95 when you make a dinner? Help me here.
I have 107 when you sit in the boss's chair.
Oh, wait a minute. At work. Not strangers. At work. Yeah.
Yeah, 107.
And that's where I have it marked too. See my little mark right there? I just didn't turn far enough. It says when you sit in the boss's chair, how do we show that we're a Christian? How many of you have been a boss in an organization other than your home where you're the ruler over your children? Okay. It's a different situation. And what are the things we have to think about as a Christian being a boss?
How what we say is going to be perceived.
How what we say? Because they know we're a Christian.
Yes.
They're going to hear that.
Treat them fairly.
We have an obligation to do that.
Well, I think how you would treat them would be similar to the biblical commands to how you would treat a slave.
Right. Absolutely. That is what we have to pull from, given that we don't have slaves in our society, but we still do have relationships where there is a master and a submissive person. And so we have obligations. We don't get to just say, I'm the boss, I said so, so there. Now, are there times when that's appropriate? And the person who's the employee has to just say, okay, yeah. But our attitude, just like any other attitude as a Christian, should be, how can I do what I need to do in the most loving, kind, encouraging, Christ-like manner? And if we keep that in the back of our heads, then probably there will be few times that we have to be otherwise. So it says on 107, God has given us certain obligations if we're the boss. We have to be conscientious about paying a fair salary. Now, sometimes we're not in charge of that. I've never been that boss that gets to decide what people get paid. I've been in a position of going to another boss and saying, this person should get more. I've been there. But I've never had the decision-making power to decide somebody's salary. But if we are, they get fair wages for what they've done. Pat, would you read James 5, verse 4? And then Emily, would you be ready to read Deuteronomy 24:14, please, ma'am? James 5:4.
Indeed, the wages of the laborers who mowed your field, which you kept back by fraud, cry out, and the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord of Sabbath.
Okay, so if you pay unfairly, the workers cry out, and the person in charge of that hears. What's the analogy there for us as Christians? Outside of the work area, what else is that talking about? If we're unfair, unkind, all these things, then people are going to feel it and know it, and they're going to cry out. Let's say government people who abuse and suppress the people, and those cries will be heard. All it's saying is that eventually, if you're unfair, the people will cry out and somebody's going to hear that cry. And it translates down to work. If we're unfair to our employees, then eventually some, if not all, of the employees will revolt, at least in some way, by going to another boss or making some comment, because we all have this inherent feeling of fairness. You know, what I've done deserves some reward. We're also warned not to be oppressive or overbearing. Deuteronomy 24:14.
You shall not oppress the hired servant who is poor and needy, whether he is one of your countrymen or one of your aliens who is in your land and in your towns.
Okay, so just because we can get away with it, does that make it right?
No.
Just because it's legal, does that make it right? No. I've worked most of my career with very poor people, and I'm appalled with the way that people take advantage of the fact that they're poor and they can't fight back in any way. Yeah, they'll pay exactly what they have to pay, but no more, and they'll push things that shouldn't be pushed and ask people to do things that they shouldn't be asking them to do.
Well, God used to, in the Old Testament, kind of command for when they plowed their fields. They were not to plow to the very end. They were actually to round their corners mm-hmm. and leave the corners mm-hmm. for the poor.
Yeah. And the fact that we can get away with extracting more than we should doesn't make it right. And the fact that it's legal doesn't make it right. We're held to a higher obligation than that. Obviously, we have to do what is by the law. But that's not the be-all and end-all of our ethical behavior and our Christian behavior.
I do believe that part of what James is saying is that we will be judged by this.
I agree.
And the Christian always has to remember, if no one else knows, God knows.
There's another.
And that's what we go by anyway.
Right.
We're
that's
serving
right.
God, and we go by that.
But what if you, let's hypothetically, what if you own a business and you're making pretty good money and you could give everybody a raise? Now it's going to cut into your money that you take home. But what if you could, and you'd still have enough, you know, to feed your family and take care of yourself, and you never ever do that?
God knows.
I think the employees know it. The employees are aware of it.
Oh, absolutely, the employees are aware of it.
Well, that makes you pretty selfish, too.
It does. It does. And, Carol.
And you lose your good employees.
You do lose your good employees because they see that you don't care. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're struggling, you're the business owner and you're struggling and they know the struggle, people, generally speaking, are incredibly kind about stuff like that. And they go, you know, I know you're doing the best you can. But what they're saying is, I'll stick with you through the bad times. I expect to be rewarded during the good times. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of people who own small businesses who never, ever, ever get to that point. They never say, you know, I'm doing pretty well, finally, and so I need to share some of this. And like you said, Carol, the good people are going to walk away because eventually they get tired of it.
Don't you think sometimes it's fear that holds people back from doing that? They're having a good year, but what if next year isn't so good? So I'm afraid to give them a raise this year because the next year I might have to take that money back because I can't afford it. So, you know, I think that's where small businesses run into a little stress is not knowing what the future holds.
But even so, even if you didn't give a raise that would have lasting impact, you could do profit sharing or bonuses or something that, you know, I don't know what next year is going to bring. It may not have any, but right now we had a really good year. Here's your bonus. Something that says to the employee, great job. I'm glad you work for me. I'm glad you're here. When we had, my eye is twitching. I don't know if y'all can see it, but we had, when I was with Randy at the accounting firm, we never had a lot of money. We had enough to keep it open and to live, but never a whole lot to share more. But we would do bonuses when we could. But the way we tried to help our employees was children were welcomed at the office. We had a playroom at the back. And so a working mom of young kids could bring her children to work. And while it wasn't a monetary amount, it saved on daycare, it saved on headaches of trying to get that all fixed. And so
that's, you know, a huge monetary event.
Well, it is. And most of them didn't really want to bring their kids every day, but that way they could do like a Mother's Day Out program or something a couple of days a week and have the kids. And we were all moms up there except Randy, and so we all took care of each other's kids, and it worked out really well. So what we couldn't afford to write in a paycheck, we could help, you know, in another way. It was actually very pleasant to have all those little kids up there. And clients would come in and they go, oh, you have the kids today. So that was actually a lot of fun. It's actually hard to read with my eye. In Philemon 1:16, Philemon was admonished. We all know that story about Onesimus. Now, not now as a servant, but above a servant, a brother beloved. Do we need to, if we have Christian people working for us, do we need to treat them in a different way? Now think about that carefully before you answer it.
That's partiality. Why wouldn't you treat a non-Christian the same?
I think we have a standard that we have to use for our Christian family. But why wouldn't we apply that to everyone? Why would we say, I'm going to treat you better, I'm going to pay you better, because you've got workers over here? And the Bible doesn't distinguish on that. He talks about workers being given their due. And I think probably the worst thing you can do from an influence standard is to say, I'm not going to treat you as well as I treat somebody who's a Christian. Because I'm not sure that's going to make somebody go, oh boy, I want to come be with you. Except maybe just on a surface level so I can earn more money. But not look at the good person that this has made you, so I want to be like you, because it's hypocritical and it's unkind. So I don't think we treat our Christian brethren who work for us any different than we treat other employees. Now, having said that, if our Christian family person needs to earn because they need to do something and we let them, is it right to say no to the other person that has the same kind of something come up? I don't think so. I think it's not treating those laborers in the vineyard, you know, the ones that came in late and the ones that came in early, they all made the same amount of money because they all contracted for the same amount of money. So you have an employee who comes in and they contract for this amount of work for this amount of pay, then as Christians particularly, we owe that to them.
That would make you a poor example as a Christian.
It absolutely would. Absolutely would.
At the same time, though, you have to exact the same quality of work from all of them.
That's absolutely true. You don't give favoritism by allowing your Christian brother to work less, which actually would be so counter to so many scriptures on his good.
I'm thinking about one person I had working for me one time, and she very quickly saw through my facade because I absolutely hated to supervise other people. And I would give her something to do, and if she's in a good mood, she'd do it. And if she wasn't, I'd find her, if I really looked, downstairs at the coffee shop having coffee. So that happened about 3 times, and I called her back to my desk one day, and I said, Flo, you are the best employee I have here. I can give you something and go on about my work. I don't have to check to see whether you finished it or not. Why are you acting like you're acting? And she dropped her head and started to cry. And I thought, oh, please, oh, please, don't do that, you know. And I told her, I said, the work you do such a good job. And I praised her all the time. She happened to be, so help me, there was not one thing pretty about this lady. She was black, and she, at that time, you know how they wore their hair in those spike things? Mm-hmm. That's how she came to work. I never criticized her for what she, everybody else had on business clothes. There's no telling what she'd show up in. But she was still the best worker I had on the floor. And when I got through with her that day, she was my slave. I'll tell you, nothing I asked of her was beyond her. Well, I didn't ask more of any of them than what I thought they could do. But
she learned that you respected her work, and that's an important part.
And Erica, I've learned a lot from Erica, even because she's been in a position of authority, sort of at work, and she has dealt with all the managers like to gossip. You know, they'll say, "Well, this person, blah blah blah, we're going to fire them if they don't straighten out," or this person, you know, their weaknesses, blah, blah, blah. They never tell
the person so they can fix it and improve.
Says, well, how does that help them?
Yeah.
You know, so she goes to them herself and says, you're on the rocks. You know, I have to let you know you've been noticed. Mm-hmm. You're on notice. If you don't change this, you're going to be fired. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to see that happen because I like you, blah, blah, blah. And they all like her. Because she's open with them and she's honest.
Right.
You know, everybody would rather be talked to than talked about.
Sure, absolutely. And like you said, it hasn't helped them in any way for people to gossip about them. It hasn't helped you as an employer because the work isn't getting any better because they don't know they're doing anything or they're not acknowledging that they're doing anything they shouldn't do. So it doesn't help anybody. I dislike gossip very, very much, and Carol, you can back me up on this. Teachers' lounges are the worst places in the world for gossip. You can walk in and hear way more than you ever wanted to know about kids, other teachers, whatever. So I spend a lot of time when I'm doing trainings talking about it's a deadly thing. It doesn't do anybody any good. It's harmful. And like you said, they can't grow from something they haven't heard. So, like you, I didn't like being a supervisor, but I have a feeling you're much better at it than I was.
Oh, no.
Because I just wanted to tell people, stop it. Just stop. Do what you're supposed to do. Quit making me talk to you about it.
My first supervisor's job, I hired our employees. And this one girl just wasn't working out. And I went to the boss with it. And he had gotten wind of a lot more than I was telling him, really. He called me in one afternoon and he said, I want you to fire her. I said, no, I'm not going to. He said, you hired her. I said, yeah, but you're not paying me enough to make me fire her. So he fired her. And I wouldn't fire her. I didn't have the nerve.
What's a big deal? Taking somebody's employment. It's a very big deal.
Well, she deserved to be fired.
I didn't deny that. Well, and I like what she's saying here about certainly couldn't be a more fitting place to apply the golden rule. Therefore, all things whatsoever you would that men should do you even so to them. So, do I want somebody talking to my boss about all the things I'm doing wrong without telling me so I can fix it? No. Do I want my boss to find out that I'm sitting down at the coffee shop and not tell me they know so I think I can keep getting away with it? No. If you are interested, I had one young lady that I supervised, and she started with us when she was quite young. And she and another friend happened to work, told you about them, they happened to work in the same county, and they would disappear because there's a lot of freedom in that work. You go pick up supplies and do this and that. Well, I pulled her aside one day and sort of said the same thing to her. I said, you're really good at what you do, and you really connect with the families, probably better than anybody else that I supervise. But if you're going to play while you're at work, you're eventually going to lose your job. That's what's going to happen. I might not fire you, but I guarantee you my boss will. And you can't let this happen. She's pretty upset with me. But a couple of years later, she said, you know, that really was important that you told me that. She said, and I was able to look around and go, okay, I'm not doing the work I should do, and I need to change that. And she did, and she became a much, much better employee, and one who was, you could count on her. You could say, please do this, and it would happen. And she had a real gift for working with our family. She herself had been a Head Start mom, and so she knew the positions they were in. And here, Amy, is what you were talking about, around the water cooler. Probably even more important than what we communicate to our boss is what we communicate to our fellow workers. You may be the only contact with Christianity that your coworkers have. Gossip springs to mind on that very quickly, because you will make a huge impact if in the middle of one of those conversations you say, I really don't engage in gossip, and leave. It will leave them sitting around going, what just happened here? Now, some of them will say, well, she's snooty, I can't believe anybody can go to her. But you can't tell me that some of them aren't going to go home and their conscience is going to niggle at them a little bit. So, it says, quotes 1 Peter 2:12, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. They may never acknowledge to you that they saw what you did, that they appreciated what you did. You may never hear that from the world. But they know. They know. And that's all about letting our light shine. That's about being that candle not hidden under the bushel. Because others are noticing. It may have the effect of watering the seed. May not. We don't ever know that. But certainly, if we join in with the evil things, that will have an impact as well. They will walk away from that conversation going, yeah, well, she said she was a Christian. I guess it's not that important to her.
Yeah. So you only have to do it one time, too.
You only have to do it one time. Unfortunately, that negative example stays in people's heads for a long time. Chris?
I used to record the employee gossip was working in restaurant management and play it back at the meeting and say, does anybody want to fix anything before it gets out of hand?
That's good. I like that technique.
It usually started the meeting with everybody very upset with each other, but anybody that was causing a problem usually would leave or resign.
Yeah. And there are people that like gossip. They like to stir the pot. They like to make things all in an uproar. For whatever reason, it gives them I think it releases endorphins into their brain. You know, they're just happy about it.
Carol?
When your coworkers, subordinates or not, know that you're a Christian, they're going to be looking for things.
Absolutely. And sometimes in order to get you.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Other times just because they're curious. How does this really impact her life? And some people, they're few, but some people are going to say, you know what, I've seen how loving God impacts your life. I want to know about that. Now, they're not many of them. They're out there. Oh.
On the other hand, I cleared a coffee room one day. I walked in to put my lunch up, actually. And there was a crowd of people in there, six or eight at least, and they were saying, I'm a Methodist, I'm a Catholic, I'm a something, and I got my lunch in the fridge and was pouring a cup of coffee, and somebody said, what are you, Opal? And I said, I'm a Christian. Sudden stillness. And what did I do? You know, well, I'm a Christian, too. And every one of them who I just heard them say, I'm a Methodist, mm-hmm. I'm a so-and-so, they were all Christians all of a sudden.
Yep.
I just smiled at them and left with my coffee. I thought, I'm not going any further with this.
But you know, the logical question in my head when they're talking about that, and then you stop them with the, mm-hmm. I'm a Christian. Well, I am, too. And I want to say, then why do you... Why is the first thing you tell me Luther's name?
Mm-hmm.
Or the Wesley brothers?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that the first thing you say instead of Christ's name? I don't get it. Don't like that much.
I managed to get entirely through a federal career without getting thrown out.
Did you?
And I don't know how, really.
Well, that brings us to the next piece. It says, the temptation is strong to make our Christianity inconspicuous. It really is. It's easier to say in our heads, well, I'm a Christian, I'm obeying God, I don't have to talk about it all the time. You know, I can just live my own little... And I don't think at the workplace you should be out preaching and proselytizing, because I think that's not what you're being paid to do. On the other hand, to try to kind of pretend that we're a Christian, but not too much of a Christian. You know, I can still fit in with y'all, because I'm just a little bit of a Christian.
If they ask.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
But I think you run into these things. It talks about Matthew 5:13 here, you're the salt of the earth. But the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It's thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and be trodden under the foot of men. If we don't have that flavor, now I have to admit, I've never known salt that didn't taste salty, so that's a little hard for me to get in my head. But if we don't have that flavor, if we're not flavoring the world around us, we're not good for anything. And I think in the workplace, it's very easy to try to slide under that, you know. Oh, everybody's going out for drinks afterwards, you want to come? Well, it's really easy to say no if they're going to a bar. But let's say they're going to go to a restaurant and have a little snack. But the purpose really is to go drink. And there's a difference. You know, you can know that difference. Is that a good time to go? Maybe it is. Maybe you have influence by saying, I don't drink, but I'll be happy to, you know, come have a taco or whatever. The parties, office parties, you don't hear as much about those. Budget cuts have impacted that terribly. But used to be a lot of private companies and the office parties, and the booze was full and free-flowing. Well, that, for me, was kind of a dilemma even to be there and hold some club soda because I'm thirsty, because it looks like an alcoholic drink. I don't think I'd have to be thirsty all evening just so somebody won't think I'm drinking alcohol, but you kind of have to do something to kind of stand apart. And it's real hard to do, I learned, with alcoholic drinks, because they can look like anything. They can look like orange juice, they can look like club soda, they can look like Coke, because they use all those things for mixers. But you just have to stand up. I remember one time in college, I was somewhere and a guy wanted me to have something to drink. And kids at that age will use sarcasm and ridicule a lot. Not so much as we get older, but I said, no, I don't drink anything. You don't drink milk. You don't drink water. You know what I mean. I don't drink alcoholic beverages. Do I have to say that whole phrase to you every time? So just the little barbs that you get. Oh, you think you're better than us because you don't drink? You know, I had some friends that we were out with. I had two friends that we were out with. Roger had not met them, and he was going to buy their dinner, and they both ordered drinks, and he just said, I will buy your dinner. I will not buy alcohol. And that's all he said. But, oh, were they offended. Mm-hmm. Well, we were going to buy our own alcohol anyway. We didn't expect you to buy it. Well, okay, he didn't accuse you of anything. He just said, I'm not paying for that. They were very upset.
Nevertheless, they were incensed.
They were incensed, and they were embarrassed.
Mm-hmm. I lost a potential worldly friend that way. It was when Ben was in basketball, there was a couple that, you know, had offered to take him to a Magic's game and stuff, and I asked, well, would you be drinking? And he said, well, yes. We always, you know, go to happy hour first and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, I'm sorry, but I don't want my son to be in the car with anyone who's been drinking.
Right, because that's foolish.
And he was just incensed. He's like, well, we don't get drunk, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, but studies have proven that even a little bit of alcohol affects us. And I said, I'm sure you understand that as a mom, I wouldn't want to put my child in that situation. I said, plus, we don't drink, so I don't want to put him in an environment where he's around adults that are doing that. And he said, he was completely insulted and said that he was hoping that we could have a friendship and he was going to invite our family over for barbecues and stuff that they drink at their barbecues. And since I don't drink, then I guess we don't have anything in common. And I thought, how sad. If I based our friendship on the fact that I won't be your friend because you drink, he'd have awful things to say about me.
Right.
But because... I don't drink. He can do that. I thought, how awful.
Well, how sad anyway that his whole common denominator is alcohol. Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. He was trying to tell me it wasn't a big deal, the amount of alcohol he drinks, but yet it's that important to him that I thought.
Oh.
Well, these kids nowadays, too, they're white till they get 21 so they can legally drink.
No, you think they wait?
That's what I'm saying. Legally.
Yeah. They don't wait to drink.
No, but they're saying they're waiting to can legally do it, not have to hide it.
Well, and then everybody wants to party because I'm legal. Mm-hmm. Of course, I get into that with kids all the time. And you're legal at a lot of different ages in this country. You're legally allowed to not be in a car seat once you reach a certain poundage. So that's a step. You're legally allowed to get a driver's license, to vote, to smoke cigarettes, to... You know, so that to rent a car, you got to be a whole lot older to rent a car. So that whole legal age thing in our country is about a 15-year span. So.
Except to enter this country.
Hmm?
Except to enter this country.
Yeah.
We don't see kids rushing out to rent a car when they're finally old enough to do that.
You
don't see them rushing out to rent a car.
No. Or vote. Let's go vote.
Too bad. Huh?
When we lived in Rolla, Missouri, the man there, he owns a radio station there in Rolla. And he had to go to all these dinners, you know, and they serve alcoholic beverages. And I remember him saying one time, I always order milk.
Oh, now that's a good one.
Because you cannot tell. Now, we went to my nephew's wedding several years ago, and there was alcoholic beverages. And we didn't drink anything there because, like you say, Pepsi, Coke, anything.
But I'm thirsty. Milk, that's a really good idea.
Don't you want something? Don't you want something? No.
And the only thing I can think of that they put in with milk would be Bailey's Irish Cream, and that's not usually at a wedding. It's a liqueur.
That stuff with me out on milk, you can't.
Yeah, that would be good.
Getting back to what you were saying here, when we were in Del Rio this past Christmas, we worshipped in Del Rio on Sundays, and San Angelo, I think it was, on Wednesdays. Anyway, there was a gentleman in Del Rio who is an engineer. He works for the city or the state, I don't remember which. But he works with a lot of liberals, and typically they do not, in his line of work, appreciate a Christian. But he not only has had a long lifetime career with them, but they respect and love him. Mm-hmm. In fact, have told him, whenever we need a job done, we know we can come to you.
Yeah.
And it's because, as a Christian, he lived as a Christian in the workplace.
Right.
To such an extent, his work was exemplary, his attitude was good, he was willing to do the work. And so even though it's not an environment that's normally friendly right. for Christians, he's made a way for himself.
And I think that often is true. If you can stick long enough, they get past it. I remember in high school, which has been a year or two, there was a party, an unofficial band party. It was band kids, but it certainly wasn't acknowledged by the school, and it was at somebody's house. And, you know, it was that group. Mm-hmm. And I said, some mother said, "Why are you home?" Because I was never home on Saturday night. And I said, "Oh, there's a party." And she said, "You weren't invited?" And so I didn't want to be invited to that one. And I said, "No, they wouldn't invite me because they know I'm not going to come." And it was okay with me. I didn't have to fend them off. Mm-hmm. You know, I would tell my kids, if you say no long enough and strong enough, they eventually leave you alone. But if you say, "Not this time," or "I'll think about it," or you do any little thing that gives them a chink to get in, then you just extend your torture. But if you say, "I don't do that, I don't go there, I don't drink," I'm done. They'll bug you about it for a little while, but eventually they'll get tired of it, go on about their business. And like you said, you've earned some respect of at least sticking up for what you believe in, whether they agree with what you believe in or not. I think it's hard for kids, but I think sometimes it's harder for adults because those office parties and things can advance your career if the person in charge feels strongly about
those
things.
You're expected to show up. Mm-hmm.
When we moved out here, I remember Randy was working for a small accounting firm, and his boss said, "Well, you need to join South Main Church of Christ." And he said, "Why?" "Well, that's where all the important people in town who are Church of Christers go, and you'll make good business contacts." And at the time, Randy was smart enough to say, "Well, that's not why we go to services, and so, you know, I won't be doing that." But it was a business contact. It's a great big huge congregation in Weatherford, and if you are a Church of Christer, it's probably the best place you would choose to go with that attitude. But it was, this man saw it as advancing career. Didn't have anything to do with worshiping God. It wasn't about what's right or wrong. It's just, who can you meet? What contacts can you make? And a lot of people feel that way about it. So it's tempting to be inconspicuous. It's tempting to say, "Well, I can go along with just this little bit." Or when people are gossiping and you're laughing. You're going along with the dirty jokes. And we hear all this stuff about ways that we can meld into the world without meaning to. And it's easy to do. The path of least resistance is always easier. It's always easier to run that way.
One of my girls, in talking about teachers and innocence and everything, there was a book club. And she was very tempted to go. And then, I guess she was talking to her listening and found out some of the ones that were gone, and she figured it right quick.
Yeah.
Be drinking.
Yeah. And there's no
But point. You know, that's such an innocent thing too.
Yeah.
That you just
go talk about a book. Surely that would be all right. Mm-hmm. Maybe, maybe not.
I had a good friend that I actually dated him for a while who taught some of the best Bible classes you would ever. He taught on a college level. Mm-hmm. And the questions he asked me, you dig. I mean, mm-hmm. I used to have to prepare 3 or 4 hours for Sunday class and 3 or 4 hours for midweek mm-hmm. class just to answer the questions. And you had to dig through the scriptures. I mean, they were tough. It was good stuff. And we door knocked together. We taught the Bible to unbelievers together. We had a great relationship. But he was a professor. When I knew him, he was writing his
dissertation.
Yes, thank you. And but as academia pressured him more and more, and because as a professor, the only way you can really, well, that may not be true, but
it's not true
in his mind.
In his
the only
mind,
way
it's
he
not
could
true.
Get where he wanted to go was to compromise. And you know, there's a lot of snobbery there.
Oh yeah.
And he did not. He buckled. And unfortunately, he's lost his faith. and it just broke my heart. I mean, I really, even when we broke up on friendly terms. I still love this guy, not in that way, right. but as a person, as yeah. a friend, and broke my heart to see that he didn't do this. Mm-hmm. He didn't hold fast to this, and he was raised in a godly home, you know, wonderful Christian parents who were totally distraught,
yeah.
you know, who warned him that this yeah. could happen, and just, you know, it's hard. It's well, hard to stand strong when there's that much pressure.
And there are a lot of workplaces where there's that kind of pressure to be a part of this world or you won't make rank. And part of it is because the person above you or above that person doesn't want to be told they're wrong by your actions. You may not actually go up to them and say, you're living a sinful life. But by your refusal, not just you didn't, but your refusal to do these things, it's obvious. And that person's going, I'm not letting him get a promotion. He's a snob and thinks he's better than me. You know, if that's the worst that we face in this world, that's pretty minor when you consider Paul being beaten and others being beheaded and tortured. And it's a small thing. Academia is a bad world for that. They want more than the drinking and the alcohol. They want you to believe all the theories. Mm-hmm. And when you stand up to them and tell them you don't,
you're
they don't like it.
Ignorant.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he's very well learned. So yeah. that really struck
And it mind. Does. It does. By the same token, just from a personal viewpoint, there's a lot of bias in the church about education. I can't tell you how many times I've heard from people that those people with PhDs, blah, 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 and I want to go, not all of us.
Sorry, I don't mean to.
No, no, no. I'm saying that it's out there, and that's okay. You know,
it's just there's danger in it.
There is danger in it.
It's not that everyone succumbs to it.
But academia is a dangerous world as far as liberalism and ignoring the fact that we are creations of a creator. You know, they don't like that. They don't like it when you tell them, you're wrong. Whether by your actions or by your words. So yeah, it's a very dangerous place because, as we all know, Christians are considered ignorant, unlearned, country folk who just want to believe in a silly superstition. Well, I'm willing to take my chances that way rather than the other way. And I absolutely know that this world and we and this wonderful child, how could that be by chance? How could that little baby come from nothing and by chance breathe and have blood circulating through his body and learn to sit up and go from this totally dependent little thing to a full-grown man who will take care of other people? I mean, it's not possible any other way. So I have no problem believing what I believe. But even if I didn't, if I were to just live a Christian life because of the rewards it would bring me on this earth, to have a good family, to be a good neighbor, to live peaceably among men, to pay my bills and be honest, that in and of itself, I think, would be a choice I would make, even if I didn't have a strong faith that tells me there's another reason. Because I think the good outweighs the bad, even in this physical life. And if I don't get a promotion, then I don't have to supervise anybody, so. I don't like supervision. We're out of time. It goes by pretty quick mostly, doesn't it? Or maybe y'all are bored listening to me talk. Maybe it's dragging for you. It goes by quickly for me. So I will mark it again. I'll probably have to ask you again next week. Even y'all think I don't study it, but I actually do study it. It's just by the time I walk in here, I've forgotten again. But we're at this little light of mine.